Today I'm in Corsham with Ruth Hopkinson, and the Reverend Phil Harrison said I should contact Ruth because Ruth would talk to me. So Ruth, the first question is, what mutual friends and acquaintances do we have?
Well, I knew this question was coming up, so I actually went through your Facebook friends list, and I thought obviously there's quite a few to do with Wiltshire Council on there. But also I noticed that you've got Sean Connolly and a number of people that I know in Corsham that are members of St Bart's Church. So I think that's most of the connection between us.
So there are a few, aren't there?
There are.
So the next question, because it's tea drinking and I do have a very nice cup of tea, so thank you very much for my tea.
Well, you're saying you've got a very nice cup of tea. You actually haven't tasted it yet.
I have had one sip.
Right, okay.
So do you drink tea?
Yes, I do. I drink tea first thing in the morning, last thing at night, and in between usually coffee or alcohol.
Well, we'll find out if tonic is your favourite thing that begins with tea in a bit. And what's your favourite cup of tea?
I just like builder's tea, so it's PG tips. I can't stand anything that is not actually a tea. It's some sort of herbal infusion, because that's not actually tea. I'm not really particularly keen on Earl Grey, but I quite like green tea, Chinese green tea, as part of a meal, but not to just drink.
Okay. Do you have a favourite time for a cup of tea in the day? Is it the morning tea? Is that the favourite
one? First thing in the morning, I need my cup of tea that rehydrates me, wakes me up, and then about half an hour later I'll have my first cup of coffee. And similarly, at night, that's my last drink before I go to sleep. Unless, of course, I've taken some water up with me. But the other thing is that what I do drink a reasonable amount of tea, because I'm actually a coffee snob, which means that if I'm going somewhere, particularly if it's in connection with the council stuff, and I know I'm going to get some horrible instant concoction, then I will always opt for tea.
Well, that seems sensible, I think. I tease people about the fact that we're trained to drink tea when we go to vicar school. We do actually get advice on that. I got advice on that as part of the pastoral tea ministry sort of visiting things. We were told to drink whatever tea you were given.
Yes.
Unless you thought it was going to make you ill, in which case find somewhere to hide it.
Well, there's a pot plant behind you.
This is good tea. I'm not going to hide this tea and waste
obviously
it.
Obviously, I must have opened that particular book, because the first thing you were offered when you came in was a cup of tea.
Yeah. I think people know. So the question which I'm asking everybody from whatever background is, how do you respond to the statement, Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
Well, for me, that's quite a difficult question. As I've explained to you, I'm an atheist. I have a Christian background. I was brought up a Catholic. And then at the age of 16, I rejected it and haven't ever gone back. I do think I'm quite spiritual, so I read quite a lot of religious books, not just about Christianity, but a multitude of other religions. And I would actually support Christian churches, despite my lack of belief. I would support them in a community environment, but obviously I don't buy into the religious faith part behind it. So in answer to the question, I think it's dying, and I think one of the reasons for that is that there is a lack of connection with communities, and therefore a lack of relevance. And that is sad, even for a non-believer like me, because I do believe that if you have faith, for certain people, it can provide moral strength and fortitude. But if it's not relevant, then it's missing its core objective, as far as I'm concerned.
I'm interested in that response, because the Christian Church are the biggest providers in the UK of toddler groups and debt advice. And sometimes I think that surprises people. I guess we're not very good at maybe talking about that.
It's a difficult one. Certainly, I know that there are... It depends what you're talking about as sort of community support. So a lot of it... There's two aspects. There's sort of organised structural stuff, which is basically what I would classify what you've just said as. And then there's the informal group working and personal contact type stuff. I'm very well aware that the Christian Church, various Christian churches, support a lot of toddler groups, things like that. You know, around here we've got the Rise Trust, which actually promotes itself as a Christian organisation. Again, I have a bit of a problem sometimes with that, because I do think, is there an ulterior motive? Mm-hmm. Now, that is just a certain amount of cynicism or scepticism from my point of view. So I have to deliberately take a deep breath and think, just because it's Christian doesn't mean it's evangelical and forcing their opinions on people. And actually, they should be judged by the positive contribution they make in the area in which they're working. So again, it's a funny one for me. I don't know if that makes any sense to you.
I mean, it does. We for 4 or 5 years looked after the Rudlow Tots group in Rudlow, which met in the community centre there. And then we actually handed it back to the Baptist Church. So, and now, of course, the community centre is shut down, which is probably a whole nother podcast, so let's not go there. But that was an absolutely free, no-pressure entry for people. Just we knew that people needed support, and we felt called to give it. Are all toddler groups run in that sort of altruism? I don't know. And some would specifically, I guess, say that these are the Christian things that we do. So the Killearn toddler group, which the church runs, we have a Christian Bible story-based craft, we have a story, and we have a couple of songs, mainly nursery rhymes, but a couple of Christian songs. And we kind of say, well, you can... That's what it is. You can choose to come or choose not to come. That's kind of the extent of the evangelism in that circumstance.
I mean, from my point of view, I'm also a Brownie leader. Mm-hmm. So that's quite interesting, because the foundations of Girl Guiding is as a Christian organisation. And when I first became a leader, which was 16 years ago, there actually was some question as to whether I could be a leader because I wasn't a Christian. The organisation has moved on dramatically since then. But a lot of how different Brownie groups organise themselves is actually completely dependent on the personality of the leader. Yeah, we've got programmes and all the rest of it, but it's how it's delivered. For me, then, yes, I do have them celebrating Christmas and Easter, but I also have them celebrating Diwali and Eid and a multitude of other faiths, festival days. And for me, that's absolutely fine, because that's opening their minds. I would personally feel if it was just Christian, then it would be closing their minds. But that's my take on it.
I think most Brownie packs get round that by not really doing anything very much at all.
I think they probably do. I mean, I have to say that we do, our finishing song is a Christian-based one. And one of the things that, the girls, by the end of the evening, the sort of slightly hyper, and then they've developed this peculiar thing that they do about squeezing each other's fingers while we're singing this. And I get really cross and actually tell them not to be blasphemous.
Mm.
So, yeah, I'm still because it's not for me to instill my beliefs. So I wouldn't diss any their religions. And if we have got Christian children with us, then actually everybody should pay their respects to their beliefs.
Mm, interesting. It's a long time since I was a Brownie leader. I can't remember if we did the closing song or not. Way back in the midst of time, I'm afraid. So the next question is a more political question. Do you think recent political turmoil has made people more or less keen to be involved in politics?
I think that the political turmoil, and by that we have Brexit, we have Trump, we have a number of things that are happening on the world stage, which actually the major impact of those is to make people angry. And that's to make them angry because people are disagreeing with them or because the way things are turning out. But there is a level of anger. And when people become angry, they become less able to engage in constructive discussions and constructive debate. And therefore, it is much more difficult to reach compromises or a way out of the issue. So the question is whether it's made people want to become more political. It certainly doesn't make them want to become more party political. It may mean that there are more political debates going on within houses, within the pubs, than potentially at a time of consensus. But actually, also, there's a feeling of helplessness, which is what is leading to the anger. And for many people, the way to deal with that is to shut off completely. So they don't join political parties, they don't engage with stuff. For a lot of people, for some people it has the opposite effect and it galvanizes them and makes them become more engaged. So it's not an easy question to answer, but I do think we're in particularly difficult political times with a lack of consensus and a lack of ability to hear other people's side of the story and then pick the bones out of it. You're either totally Trump or totally anti-Trump. You're either totally Brexit or you're totally anti-Brexit. You're either totally Tory or you're totally anti-Tory. You're either totally Corbyn or totally anti-Corbyn. And those fissures are evident through the population as a whole and actually through each individual party. So it's a difficult one.
The response to the Brexit vote by someone, the wife of someone I know, was to go and join the Lib Dems as in protest. And she took this, actually, I need to speak for moderation in this. I don't know if anyone else has. I don't know any other friends who've done
that. That's exactly what I did. When I was on the town council, I was always independent. I was a member of the Lib Dems. I was a member of the Liberals. It shows how old I am. And then was actually a member of the party when it became the Lib Dems. And then I ceased engagement with party politics. But actually, it was the Brexit vote that made me go, do you know what, I am now totally fed up with this. And actually, I've got to stand up and be counted and put my head up and go, right, enough already. So it applies to me. I wouldn't say I changed my allegiance. I just handed over my subscription.
And I wanted to ask you this question about volunteering, because I thought as a town councillor you would probably have a view on this. So what do you think are the most important issues in volunteering at the moment? I was kind of thinking about trouble recruiting volunteers, but you may not see that as a kind of issue.
Well, I do think it's an issue. I'm involved with a huge range of volunteering activities, and quite often it's the same people that you see for this, for that, for the next thing. But the major issue is that, and Wiltshire Council at the moment is trying, as they contract the services that they provide, they're asking for volunteers to step up and take over, whether that's at libraries or whatever. And actually, dealing with volunteers is the most difficult thing you can possibly do, because you have no carrots and you have no sticks. And if they decide that they want their shed built here rather than there, or whether they decide they are going to turn up or they're not going to turn up, or they're going to comply with what everybody's agreed or not, there's not a lot you can do about it. But my view is the secret of actually getting volunteers to come forward and to be productive is that you have to understand what their motivation is. So it could be that it's political, it could be that it's something that has particularly upset them, like food banks, or, you know, lack of provision, which requires food banks. But most of all, they need to have some sort of knowledge that they are worthwhile, that they are achieving, that they actually can make friends. So most of what makes a volunteering group work is the softer things. It's about communication, it's about friendship, it's about fellow feeling, it's about the warm fuzzy glow you get when you think you've done something nice and it's appreciated. So I, as I say, I spend a lot of time with volunteers, and obviously I'm a volunteer myself. As a town councillor, I don't get paid. As a brownie leader, I don't get paid, but it's about making people feel good about themselves. And if you make people feel good about themselves and what they're doing, then they will engage more, give more, and produce more. Now, that's that. If you listen to that back on a podcast, that probably sounds very manipulative. You know, it's you know, getting people to do what you want, but actually, it's getting, it's delivering to those people what they want. And that's the most important thing, I reckon.
As you were speaking, I was reflecting on some of the experiences in our churches and in our wider church structures, where that works well and where that doesn't work well. And I think there's some really useful thoughts there about organisations. So I have three PCCs. And I had no training on managing volunteers, and so I have three legal bodies which are entirely manned by volunteers, which is about 80 volunteers and people who run services and all these sorts of things. So actually, it's very, very interesting. The other question I have for you was, what is the best thing about Corsham?
Right, well, that's in some ways that's easy, in some ways it's difficult. As far as I'm concerned, and I've lived in Corsham, I'm not Corsham born and bred, I've lived here for 24, 25 years, brought my children up here. I certainly wouldn't want to live anywhere else, and the reason for that is, going back to some of your previous questions, is actually the level of community engagement that I think there is. So it's about all of those people that help with the sports clubs, with the social clubs, with, you know, again, food banks and guiding and scouting, and it's just friendly, it's beautiful, and actually it's welcoming. So for somewhere like Corsham, the number of people who are actually born and bred in Corsham is remarkably few. Most of us are incomers, for whatever reason, because of location or a lot of ex-MOD families. And once they've come here, they think, do you know what, it's really nice here. And they stay. And that's certainly true of a large number of the MOD people. And that's because they've got opportunities to engage with the community. There's lots of facilities that they can use. It's good for schools, it's good for children. It's a wonderful place to bring children up. It's not absolutely perfect, nowhere is, which means there's all sorts of other things that we need to do about improving the economic climate for those pre-parents. But for me, it's a beautiful place. It makes me feel glad to come back because whenever I'm away, because it just feels friendly, feels open, and I suppose because I just know so many people here, I can walk down the street and I have to allow 15 minutes before extra for wherever I'm going, just in case.
That's lovely. And the last question is, what's your favourite thing beginning with T?
Well, you gave me a suggestion as tonic earlier on. I probably should have ginned up on this before. And I'm always absolutely hopeless when it comes to any of the quizzes on television where it's something that begins with T. I suppose, actually, what I would say is this is probably a cheat. And that is the town. And that's the town of Corsham. And that is, it is by and large, one of my favourite things. And I've sort of slightly manipulated that so it comes out with the T.
That's a cheat. But it's not the worst cheat we've had. Thank you ever so much for speaking to me today, Ruth.